Good evening, brethren. Mike Clevenger, and I want to welcome you to the February 2016 Master Builder Call. As always, we appreciate you taking the time to join us as we all continue to educate ourselves so we improve ourselves, and certainly our goal is to improve masonry, not only in our own lodges in Ohio, but also in the entire world. Before we get started tonight with our special guest, I want to thank, first of all, the brothers who were in Findlay on the 13th of this month at the Becoming Masonry Workshop. It's, I've said this before, it's always so enjoyable to be with brothers who want to improve their lives and make masonry more meaningful. And we had another day of that in Findlay. We had a great dialogue, and I get to go back. I truly look forward to being back in Findlay in June when we hold the Masonic Leaders Trestle Board there, which, as you may or may not know, is the second course in the Masons Lead Better series, and I'm looking forward to that because that's brand new. So again, thanks, brothers who were in Findlay, and looking forward to being back there. When I say I always enjoy it, I always ask in all these workshops about what the brothers there that day, what their dreams are for masonry. And being in Findlay was no different. In one of the calls, I said I had accumulated from last year over 200 different statements about the dreams and aspirations the brothers in Ohio have here for masonry. And it's just, and Findlay was no different. And one of the things they said, it's on my mind because it's still on the flip chart paper in my office here, is their dreams that was stated was to make masonry such a premier known organization that men want to become members. And I thought that was a great, great statement. And I just wanted to bring it out here as we begin tonight. Well, enough of me talking. Tonight's guest, as advertised, is Nick Bolliard. And Nick is the LEO of Nea Acacia Lodge here in Columbus. And how this all came about, Nick and I are part of the 14th District's Master Builder Group. And at our last gathering, among other things, Nick was describing his approach to lodge education. And it just kind of impressed me by the way Nick thought about it and the effort he puts into his programs. So that kind of prompted me to invite him to share his thoughts tonight. And actually, I think he's going to do it tomorrow night at his own lodge. But the title, Servant Leadership and Acting Above the Line, is tonight's title. And without further ado, Nick, I want to welcome you and thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, brother. It's great to be here. It's a privilege to be a Mason and to live masonry. And, when we talked at the last meeting, you asked me about my LEO presentations. I said they're collaborative. Masonry is collaborative. We sure. learn from each other. We build with each other. And this group is no different, and I'm honored and humbled to be here this evening and talk to you guys.
Yeah, well, really, excuse me, before we get into that, the Master Builder Group we have, I guess we could say, Nick, it's small but mighty, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I early on when you guys met, I had a hard time getting to the meetings and got to my first one and really enjoyed that. And we're going to do that again this week, aren't we?
Yeah, this Friday at Donato's Pizza up in Westerville.
Yeah.
We're looking forward to another great conversation. I think we're on our third one.
Yeah.
remember the topic off the top of my head, to be honest with you, but it's a great group. It's great camaraderie and just great fellowship. And we learn a lot. It's 2 hours of sharing.
Yeah, and for those listening who may not know what we're talking about, is a part of the Masons Lead Better program is in your district. We started last year as a grassroots effort a group called the Master Builder Group, which gets together on a set schedule here in the 14th. We meet once a month, and we go back over the material in the Masons Lead Better Becoming Masonry workbook and talk about the struggles and the successes we have in living Masonry, living our lives, and struggle. In some days you struggle to get anything done. So it's very rewarding, and so Nick and I are part of that, and invite you, if you're in the 14th district or close and want to come to Donato's in Westerville on Friday night, come on down. Well, Nick, why don't you give us a little background about yourself, your family, what you do for a living, and then tell us how you got involved in Masonry.
Sure. Well, I am I'm from right here in Columbus, Ohio. Grew up in a Masonic family. My dad, my grandfather, both Masons. I went in Squires and had the privilege of being the first young man in this district to serve as the Master Squire. There, went into DMLA, served as Master Counselor. Again, had another privilege and another blessing to serve as State Scribe, and I was the first one from my chapter to get the privilege to do that. And that really got me into Masonry itself, was that experience. But it was also kind of a blessing, too, because I met my lovely fiance through Masonry. Neat. And she's a former Joby. And her dad is a past master up at Hiram. He's a senior warden this year. So just having that opportunity. And I work down at Taze Valley High School. I serve as an educational aide, which is a polite way of putting grunt, to do what we need you to do.
We all have to start somewhere.
Exactly. Well, I oversee what we call the Alternative Learning Center, which is the polite and political way to put in-school suspensions. So I work with at-risk youth on a daily basis.
Wow.
It's a very challenging job, but I love it. The young people are great. You know, I don't mind driving 45 minutes to work with them. It's worth it. They're worth every moment I'm down there. I also had the opportunity to serve as an assistant football coach, so I'm privileged to work with some great young men on the football field. And prior to Taze Valley, I got my master's degree in sport management with a leadership concentration from Ohio Dominican. I also served as a graduate assistant and director of football operations there for their football program under Coach Bill Conley.
A neat guy, isn't he?
He is. He is a neat guy. He's a really great guy to work for. He's a great guy in general, just a great coach. Prior to him, worked at Otterbein University when I was an undergrad. As a student assistant there, got my bachelor's in sport management. So I'm a lot of degrees in sport management, but hopefully they'll pan out for me here.
So let me interrupt just a second here. So all of this sports here, what's the ultimate goal of Nick Boyard? What would be the dream for you in the world of sports?
I would love to have the opportunity to serve as an athletic director. I think that's a position that I think just serving the young people and the coaches and being there behind the scenes and making sure the school runs smoothly and logistically smooth. I think I can do that. I would. That's my dream job.
And now, would that be, Nick, at the high school level or college level, or it doesn't matter?
I prefer high school. I love where I'm at. I love Taze Valley.
If they
made me full-time at Taze Valley, I'd stay there forever at in-school suspensions. I love Taze Valley, but honestly, I would love to be an athletic director at a high school or a small college. Go back home to Otterbein, whatever works. I love Central Ohio, so I really don't want to leave Central Ohio.
Oh, neat, neat. Well, you sound like one of those men who at your age has got a direction figured out. I reflect many times about where I was when I started college and was kind of wandering around, not knowing really why I was there. And so thanks for sharing, you know, the fact that you've got some set goals and some dreams for your profession. So your background kind of was masonry in the family, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of masonry in the family. Like I said, my dad, my brother's a Mason. My grandfather's a Mason. I have a great uncle who's a Mason. I have another great uncle who's a Mason. I have a lot of a family who have been Masons.
Subject matter tonight, but you got me interested. How did your dad, your uncles, your grandfather, how did they approach you about masonry? Did they just expect you to do it, or was there some prompting going on?
Well, being in DMLA, I think that's a big prompt.
I guess so.
But it was kind of one of those things at 19 is you want to do this? And I said yes. And I had the investigation was the shortest meeting I've ever had, and that was it. And the rest is history. Here I am.
Sure, sure. Well, let's get to the subject here. So tell us about, first of all, how the subject, the servant leadership, and how that came about and caught your interest.
Well, I was taking a class at Otterbein University, and the professor, John King, had us read this book, and I have been trying to remember the name of this book for 2 days, and I can't remember it.
Okay.
And it talks about servant leadership, and it was heavily studied by Robert Greenleaf, and it just caught my eye, and I just fell in love with it. And being in coaching and that opportunity to serve young people, I thought, man, this is a great book. This is a great opportunity. This is a great leadership model. I fell in love with it. And while I was in grad school, my professor said, well, you need to pick a capstone or a thesis. And I said, you know, servant leadership in high school football would be great for me because I'm so amped up about servant leadership. So that's really what caught my eye. I love the theory of it, and I love how you can translate it to anything and everything. So caught my eye.
Okay, so for those who may not be familiar with the term, tell them what servant leadership is. What is the concept?
You know, servant leadership, you know, first of all, is putting the servant before the leader. And I know that sounds kind of, well, duh, that's why they call it servant leadership. But, but you know, a lot of people think, oh, he's a great leader. And servant leaders don't really worry about leading as much as they worry about what can I do for you? You know, they worry about the needs of their employees, of the members. They put that before everything else. They work off of what's called an inverted pyramid. And the inverted pyramid is basically everybody has seen the pyramid with the CEO on top, and he's the top dog. And the members or the employees are all the way on the bottom. And instead, servant leaders flip it. They say there's nothing more important than our customers and our frontline employees. There's nothing more important than them. And they just spend all their time finding how to meet the needs of the customers and the frontline employees. And translate that in masonry, you know, I think our grandmaster, Steve Kochenauer, would be an example. He put all the members first. He put those members first, and that was a great way just to kind of show servant leadership. I honestly don't know much Worshipful Brother Rill. I assume he's the same way. But, you know, in masonry, in your lodge, it could be, you know, as a master, you're making the coffee, you're setting up the room, you're cleaning the robes, and you're doing it with love. You're not doing it to ask for attention. You're doing it because you know that's what needs to be done for the members. And that's what the members need for them to thrive.
Yeah, and I often when we get into this subject in the workshops, we talk about. I always like to bring up and talk about the fact that the Masonic model of leadership, the traditional, you progress through a progressive line, and when you're the master, you're the top dog, you have all the responsibility, it is up to you to make the decisions, sometimes bumps into this concept of servant leadership. And there are some men who forget that, wait a minute, we're all the same, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one thing I've talked to members in our lodge about in the Acacia, is it's not the Worshipful Master's year. It's not your year as Worshipful Master. You are serving as Worshipful Master, and that's a privilege. You're serving as Senior Deacon. You know, I serve as Senior Deacon. I'm not the Senior Deacon. I serve as Senior Deacon.
Yeah, and I think that's a healthy attitude. I really do, given all of the other values we have in Masonry, that servant leadership. Well, you mentioned, you gave some examples here. I was looking through your outline, and you mentioned some attitudes, certain attitudes and behaviors that make a servant leader unique. Can you give us a little insight into that?
Yeah, absolutely. As soon as I pull up what you're looking at, are you looking at the PowerPoint, my brother?
No,
Yeah, I'm just, there you go.
I mean, you know, you're talking about five important attitudes.
There we go. I got you. I apologize for that.
No,
I
that's all right.
On my screen.
Hey, we're all brothers here. We're just faking it tonight, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, important attitudes, you know, you have to have a vision. I think that's so important for a servant leader is having a vision. Where are you going? You know, and not only where are you going, how are you going to get there, and why are you going there? You know, kind of like Simon Sinek always says, you know,
right.
Start with the reason why. You know,
why are you going there?
You know, and listening is the second attitude. You know, you have to listen to other people, I think, to be successful when you're being in a leadership role, or even when you're not in the leadership role. I serve as the craft club president, and the biggest thing I try to work on is listening to all the members, whether they're 85 or 35. You know, everybody's opinion matters. So listening, you know, committing to the success of the staff is the third attitude, and that's basically, you know, just what it says, honestly, is putting time in to make sure that your staff succeeds, to make sure the other officers succeed, the members succeed, and in your job, making sure the employees succeed. So putting that as a forefront of how can I make them successful. The next one is, you know, have to delegate power. We do that, and we're really good at that in Masonry. We're really good at delegation. All the committees and all those things, that's a lot of delegation, and I think
sometimes we overdo it, don't we?
Sometimes you do. Yeah, you have to be really careful how much you do, and that comes with a trust too of, you know, how much can this brother hold, you know, and you know you trust that that's going to be successful, but you also have to kind of watch how much you're doing it, because then you might become lazy in other people's eyes, and just being a builder of the community. You know, again, always kind of build. I always look at being a builder of the community as the attitude. You are the atmosphere you create with your
mm-hmm.
attitude. You know,
yeah.
And kind of that. There's a quote that I have on my door. You know, is that as a leader, you possess great power to be an instrument of torture, or you can be this tool of greatness for somebody else, depending on the atmosphere you create. So I always think about that from being a builder of the community, is just what kind of atmosphere are you creating?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the right attitude always dictates, in a lot of cases, how successful something is going to be. If you go in there as a leader with a can-do, positive attitude, even though you're surrounded by alligators and up to your neck in quicksand, as sometimes leaders find themselves, and let everyone know it's going to be okay. We just need to pull together. That gets you part of the way there, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Attitude's everything. You know, coaching football, you know, we had a 1-2 start this year, and attitude was everything. We had a small coaching change in the middle of the year. Varsity offensive coordinator left week 4 on a Tuesday of the rivalry game. So attitude was everything, and we went 7-0 for the rest of the way, 8-2 on the season, made the playoffs. Attitude was everything for us. And so attitude's everything in your lodge, too, because, you know, you can look at your lodge and go, well, we haven't raised anybody in a year. We're recycling past masters. You can look at it as doom and gloom, or you can look at it as this is an opportunity to build and grow. What can we do better? And that self-improvement tool that's on the Grand Lodge website, that's a huge help, too, I think.
Yeah. You hit on something. I'm going to take you on a little aside here that triggered a thought. You said recycling past masters. And I had a conversation, and I can't remember exactly what the context was, but think about this on that point. Does it matter? Does it really matter if you're providing, and we're talking about servant leadership now,
yep.
Does it really matter that it's a past master in a leadership position in your lodge, as long as you're serving the members and giving them the masonry they want?
Absolutely with you.
Yeah. I mean, certainly you want the lodge to grow and have more men to train and be able to be part of the leadership line. But certainly if you've got experienced men leading the lodge because you're trying to build up the lodge, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think, you know, if you're a past master and you're sitting in the West right now, or you're sitting in the South, or if you're sitting in the East right now as a past master, I think you're, just like what we talked about, going back to attitude, you know, what's the attitude of that master? What's the attitude of those past masters? You know, I am very fortunate. My grandfather this year is the master, and I'm not going to talk good about him just because he's my grandfather. He's doing a great job this year as master, in my opinion, because he took the attitude of, we need to get back to what we were doing when we were successful, and we're not just meeting anymore. You know, we have every third Wednesday of every month, we're doing something fun with for our wives, and just in the community, too. You know, we went to the zoo lights, we had our sweetheart dinner, we had pizza and beer night. You know, we had things that get the membership going again, and we've seen great results out of it. And that attitude has been so helpful. We already have 2 petitioners, which is a bonus compared to last year. So that attitude has been huge, huge for us. The one thing about servant leadership that I want to touch on, if you don't mind, not to
go off
what you were saying, you know, servant leadership, the one thing you'll find is people want to counter you. You know, I found this out when I was studying it. They say, well, the inmates are running the asylums. And I want to touch on that. If you read through my paper, you think inmates run the asylums, and how does that relate to masonry? You know, in masonry, it wouldn't be inmates run the asylums. It would be just a clustered mess and no direction at all. But what you're going to find out is the members actually will be a lot more autonomous, and they will take charge of their own roles and feel more responsible. They'll feel like they have more investment, and that you'll get so much more production out of them. And that's what we found studying it when I was studying it for sports. You know, every coach in America wants their team to be more mentally tough, and the mentally toughest players play for servant leaders.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, that's a good point, Nick. You think about a volunteer organization where you have no leverage such as a paycheck or anything, and after building a positive relationship, you let those who are helping with a project or running the lodge or doing ritual work, whatever it is, you say, here's what the lodge needs to accomplish. You have the skills, brother. You do it. Let me know if you got problems, but I want you to take charge and do that. And you're right. They get some invested. They get some, lets them know that their being there matters.
Servant leadership is all based on community and teamwork.
Right.
You know, and that's the community, again, attitude and atmosphere. What kind of community are you going to build in your lodge, and what kind of teamwork do your members have? And that will dictate a lot on the success of that servant leader, in my opinion.
Neat.
What I found, you know, you look at my PowerPoint, I can send you, brothers. You can always reach out to me, and I can send it. You know, the coaches with servant leadership records were very, very successful. Servant leader coaches, excuse me, were very successful in record. So that tells you, and they're doing, when I went and watched, they had great teamwork, positive community, positive program. So that's, you're going to find a lot of success in your lodges as well.
Neat, neat. Well, let's jump on here and tell us about this above the line and the R factor thing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this has made a lot of public news lately because of Urban Meyer down in Ohio State. And he wrote a book that says Above the Line, and now he's got this line that says, you know, if you're not going to live above the line today, go back. And it was really developed by this guy named Tim Kite, son. I think his name's Brian is his son. And they call it the R factor. And what you guys want to pop in your head is E plus R equals O.
Event, E plus R equals O. Got it.
Yep. Event plus response equals outcome. So the R factor, it's a big focus on your response. You can't always control the E. That's for sure. We find that out in lodges all the time. You can't control the event. You know, the event could be, you know, we barely make a quorum this meeting. You know, what's our response? And then that's going to dictate the outcome. Well, we could get upset about it and throw in the towel, and the outcome's probably going to be bad. Or we could find out why do we not have that problem and make a positive response out of it and try to get a positive outcome. So it's really focused on the R. The R is huge. So it's a big R, more importantly.
So how you respond to a bad situation for you. Say you show up at lodge and you don't even have enough masons to open the lodge. The response could be, well, let's all go home. That was a bust. Or you sit around and talk about how you're going to increase the number of men coming to your lodge. So is that what you're saying? Even though it's a bad thing, you make it a good thing by your response.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Got the concept here? Okay, good.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not just, you know, and it's not just about the membership, you know, how can I get more members? It's, you can have a roundtable discussion about masonry and find something, you know, pop open those ritual books and find the 47th problem and look into that more and just have great fellowship. You know, somebody go up the street and buy a pizza, you know, and just having that great fellowship with each other. And that would be a positive response. A positive response is where everybody goes home and says, man, I'm really glad I drove to lodge tonight.
Okay, cool.
And then, you know, kind of going into that, he broke it into two segments of your responses. First of all, I don't want to skip over this. Your response is your 20 square feet. Every human being has 20 square feet, and I can put this at the chair you're sitting at right now. That's your 20 square feet. You own that 20 square feet. You can't own somebody else's. So you have to control your 20 square feet, and then that will help. That will be a huge asset. So that I don't want to miss on that. The next part is, you know, above the line or below the line. And I kind of broke this into three. I broke this into three parts. I said at the line. So above the starting below the line, we'll start below first. You know, this person is impulsive. They're very resistant to change. They hate change. They blame others. They complain about how bad the situation is. And they're just,
still there, Nick?
Still there, yeah.
I was getting background noise, Nick, from I had the call lines open, so I closed the call line. Sorry about that.
No problem.
You're good.
No problem.
Go ahead.
You know, below the line is blame, complain, defend. They're victims. You know, they put themselves in a victim mindset. It's the world is against them. It's me against the world. You know, and they're just overthinking about themselves. You know, they use this verbiage, well, we can't do that. It's never been done. It's never been possible. You know, that's that kind of thing. They're angry. They're jealous. You know, maybe even some revengeful individuals. That's kind of how we define below the – that's how he defined below the line. I defined it, you know, at the line for autopilot. He put autopilot below the line, and I kind of wanted to put it at the line because I think, you know, just to set that separation, at the line would be, well, it's always been done this way. How many times have we heard that?
And it's easy to do it the way it's always been done, so why should I –
You got it. You got it. You know,
let's just coast along here.
Exactly. That person is just on cruise control. They're on pilot. They're just, you know, it's comfortable. This is comfortable. You know, so I'm just going to keep doing this. This is what we're going to keep doing. It's always been done this way. We're not going to change it. There's nothing about change. You know, they may point fingers at other, which, you know, it's your fault, da-da-da-da-da, those things. And those are the below-the-line and at-the-line responses. You know, they might identify risks, but they don't do anything about it. Oh,
yeah, that's what I was
going to
mention. This is people that are sort of risk averse, or they're fearful that I may fail or something like that.
Exactly. You know,
so
they're
comfortable at the line, just coasting along.
Exactly. Now, the above the line is intentional. It's very skillful. It's the achiever mindset. We can do something. We can do this. No, we'll get it next time. If there's a failure, you know, hey, we failed. It's all right. We'll get them next time. You know, and this person sees the opportunity. You know, they do foresee solutions and they act on them. They're aware of their surroundings and they look for the positive end result. And how they act, you know, they listen to others. They follow through on their word. They're honest and they act with a purpose. Everything they do has a purpose and it's a positive outcome that they're looking for.
Right.
So that's how you can look at above the line. And when you think of acting above the line, that's kind of what you're looking at.
Yeah, this reminds me of is that this above the line person, intentional, skillful, willing to take risk, is psychologists look at a couple of basic behaviors. One is a positive mindset, which is what you're describing is the guy who's above the line.
Yep.
And someone with a fixed mindset who's below the line, who says, gee, I don't have the ability to do any better. I can't learn something new. If I do something new, that means that what I did before was wrong, all that kind of stuff. So,
I think the brothers of my lodge were upset with me and maybe in a good way when the first night I was serving as the craft club president, I said, I don't want to hear the C word anymore. I don't want to hear that can't anymore. We can do something about this. We can do it. We will do it. There's a big difference in can't and can't, you know, and that changes attitudes very quickly.
So when we're talking about this response, the preferred response is that of being an achiever mindset above the line.
Absolutely. You want to have above the line responses to everything.
Got it. So how does what's the R factor? What's that? Is that the response part or?
Absolutely. The R factor is response. You know, like I said earlier, you can't dictate the event, but you can always dictate your 20 square feet response. And he broke it into six different steps to control your R factor. Number one is press pause. How many times in our lives do we act on instinct right away? I know I've been guilty of it before. I'm sure, Mike, you have been as well. We all are as persons.
Yeah.
You know, as people, we just either jump on autopilot, if that's the way it's always been done, or we just go right to the BCD, blame, complain, defend. Number one is you got to stop. You got to push pause. You got to stop and think, okay, I got to get myself off of autopilot. And that goes right into number two. Get your mind right. You know, change that inner response because you have to change your subconscious response of, blaming or complaining or defending or, well, we'll just do it this way because that's the way it's always been done. And you press pause, and then you get your mind right. You get your mind right into this is what we need to do. You know, this would be an above-the-line response. And the step three is step up, act on it. You know, act on that above-the-line response with the best response possible. You know, you kind of evaluate through everything in those first two steps, and you act on it the third step. The fourth step is adjust and adapt. I like to call that overcome and adapt because life's going to throw adversity at you. You know, how many times have we, this is a great event, it's a great outdoor event, and we wake up that morning and it's storming. What's your response? You know, what's your response going to be? You have to control your response there. You can't, well, we'll just cancel it. Well, why don't we move inside? You know, find something that's
find
positive.
Something to make it work, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And that goes right into number five. As soon as you find something and act on it, you know, you have to, that's going to make a difference. Number five is make a difference. You're going to create a positive experience for those around you. You know, with that picnic example, you wake up that morning, it's storming down rain, you look outside, your gut response is right away, I can't believe this rain, it would rain today, we're going to have to
shut it down, right?
Push pause. Second one is, okay, what can we do? What's the next step we can do? Oh, how about we just have it in a shelter house? Or why don't we just, you know, make some calls and have it at our lodge? No big deal. Third one is step up. Start making those calls. Start making the adjustments. Posting on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. The fourth, you know, again, be able to adjust and adapt. You're going to have guys that might go to that shelter house or that park, so you might need to call somebody and set up a little backup of, hey, can you wait there and send everybody here? That's going to make a difference because people are going to go. They're going to have a positive experience. And the sixth one is, you know, just build the skill. You know, now you made one above-the-line response, keep doing it. You know, we always say actions become habits. Habits define character. Character determines your destiny. You know, change those negative below-the-line actions to make them above-the-line actions. Make those actions your habits. It's going to be real good for you.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're triggering a lot of things here. You know, I've heard from other coaches, other leadership authors, and now when I looked at Tim Kite, who developed this whole above the line R factor, I noticed that he and his, you say that it was his son or his brother, they were working with the Ohio State football team, weren't they?
Yeah, they worked with they started working with the Ohio State football team, I believe, in 2014. This really got a big boom with Ohio State. Ohio State had wristbands that said E plus R equals O. Urban Meyer wrote a book says Above the Line, and that really made them famous for it. And they've been doing this for a long time now, and he and his son have been, but that's what made him famous and really kicked it off. And now they're speaking. I think they were at Texas a couple weeks ago. I kind of, if you follow them on Twitter, they'll kind of tell you where they are.
Yeah, and I said earlier that before we started the call that I went to Tim Kite's website, and I got interrupted. I was trying to watch a little video, but he was talking. Three words I wrote down was culture, leadership, and behavior. And as he related this, his methodology to coaching and change the culture, change the leadership, and change the behavior. And certainly all of this is changing your reactionary behavior, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. How obviously you've used this as your role as coach at the high school.
Mm-hmm.
How did these young men react to this?
They love it. I have it on my whiteboard behind my head every day. It says E plus R equals O, and a couple young men are student aides for me. you know, being an in-school suspension is not a lot. I'm going to see my board, but they react very positively to it. They started thinking about their responses to situations. You know, high school kids, you know, have a lot of peer pressure. They have a lot of stuff going on in their life, and they don't always know how to push pause. They don't know always how to always control that R. And so they've reacted really well to it. And like I said, the success of the team and the program just speaks for itself. Our head coach is a servant leader. He believes in servant leadership. He believes in above-the-line responses, and it's been really helpful for us. And we had a great year this year, and that was a huge help.
Yeah, and I'm just I'm thinking about this, and as part of the Masons Lead Better workshop, we talk about your reaction to your response or react. Let's use the word response. That's part of your formula. The response to things that happen to you in your everyday life, and are your responses that of a Mason? And so you could really, your response above the line from a leadership standpoint is intentional, skillful, but your response to an unpleasant, let's say an unpleasant exchange with someone during the course of your day, your response should be as a Mason.
Absolutely. This E plus R equals O marries up with Masonic values so well. You know, past master of my lodge said it so well. He said, do you have your apron on today, visible or invisible? Because the invisible apron is so important, and that's controlling your responses. You know, he put it in the context of a driver. You know, you put that square and compasses on your back license plate, what do you do if somebody blows a horn at you or they cut you off? You know, what's your gut response? Probably not
good.
Very Masonic. Yeah, not a very Masonic one. So push pause and have that above-the-line Masonic approach, and I think that's definitely, these marry very, very well.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I thought of, and we talk about in the workshops about developing a Masonic lens so that these tools and lessons of Masonry and your reaction to something maybe negative that comes to you during the day or with your family or even another brother should be viewed through a Masonic lens so your response is Masonic.
Absolutely. You know, and you can even put it with your relationship, you know, whether it be, you know, with your significant other, with your parents,
right,
with your friends, you know, they're gonna, I'm sure there's times where your wife really ticks you off. I'm sure. And my fiance and I, we're not perfect. Life isn't perfect. And
right,
when you're about to say something you regret and that un-Masonic action, you just got to think, you know, you just got to stop and think about that response. You know,
yeah, and that's actually
really control the response, and that's going to help. That's going to help you give a positive outcome, for sure.
Yeah, psychology says that when you get in a situation where you get just totally, I mean, something just really ticks you off, what happens, the amygdala, which is the center part of your brain that controls your survival sense, it takes over. And so what happens, you stop thinking. Your frontal part of your brain, the thinking part, is taken over by this, you know, I got to fight this guy or I got to lash out at him. And the first thing they tell you to do, Nick, is stop, pause, and think about what just happened to you. Whoops, I'm about to do something bad here. I better think about it. My response is going to be bad.
You know, it's like the old parable, the Cherokee parable. There are two wolves inside of us. You know, one is evil and one is the joy.
Right.
And you know, the grandson says, well, which one wins the battle? And the grandfather says, the one you feed. And I think that's so true in this above-the-line response.
Oh,
you
sure.
Know, that's a battle internally. Those two wolves are in you fighting, you
yep.
know, whichever one you feed. You know, if you're feeding that good one on a habit, and you make these above-the-line responses a habit, that inner bad wolf might die off for you. And it will never go away completely, but it will be much, much quieter.
Yeah, and you mentioned, earlier developing positive, I think you touched on habits, you know, the more you condition yourself to respond positively to negative situations, the easier it's going to get.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm sure,
habits are so important.
Yeah, I'm sure you teach that to your football players, you know.
No, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. When I talk to them, you know, it's a habit. You know, showing up for workouts, that's a habit. Showing up with a good attitude is a better habit. You know, showing
right.
up's great, but how's your attitude when you're in here? You know, are
yeah.
you here to get better,
good point.
And make the team better? You know, never confuse activity with achievement. You know, that's a big difference.
There you go.
You know, and that's the same
well
way
said.
In the lodge. Going to lodge is a habit, but going to lodge and sitting there doesn't mean anything. That's great. I'm happy
glad
you're there.
Here.
But, you know, going to lodge and being a part of the fellowship, you know, maybe volunteering to do a ritual part, maybe not even that, maybe volunteering to be the cook. We have a guy in our lodge who sits on the sidelines, but he cooks all our meals, and he's a fantastic chef, and that's his service. And to me, that's awesome. That's a positive outcome. That's
neat.
A great habit, too.
Yeah.
And
well,
great
this
food,
is,
so good bonus.
Yeah. Well, we've got some brothers here on the car, so what I thought we did, great stuff, Nick. I mean, this is really, really good stuff. And you know, these are the kinds of conversations we want to have on our calls is those like Nick who have experience in using these techniques and then applying them to masonry. That's what we're here about, improving ourselves in Masons. So I'm going to unmute all the callers. I mean, usually we use the Q&A line where you got to hit *6, but if any one of you brothers on the call want to identify yourself and let us know your comments or questions, I'd be glad to hear from you.
Bill Estelle here.
Oh, Bill, what's your number?
What's my number?
Well, I'm gonna put your name next to your phone number, Bill.
Oh, it's 614.
Yeah.
764-8986.
Oh, okay, Bill. That way, the next time you call, see,
mm-hmm.
it just pops up, and I don't have to guess.
Oh, okay. All right.
Hey, Bill, how you doing?
I'm well.
Good evening, right, worshipful brother.
How are you this evening, Nick?
Wonderful. It's great to hear from you.
I was listening to your comments and your discussion there a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of what I heard, I think commitment has a lot to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And you also talked about when you your reactions, and you talked about the two kind of inner selves. What was it? An Indian.
The Cherokee parable. The
Cherokee,
two wolves.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. That's
and I also I was reminded of that Chinese proverb too. That when you start down the road to revenge, dig two graves.
There you go.
Yeah. okay. And
absolutely.
Kind of along the same lines there, but I was reading a book the other day by Dr. Billy Graham, and he talked about commitment, and he says one of the problems we have in our society today is people that are not committed, and as a result, we seem to have a feeling of despair or hopelessness in the future, and I think commitment, when you're talking about how you respond and how you react to people. How committed are you to the word and to the things that we teach in Masonry?
Yeah, good comment. Yeah.
I think
absolutely.
I think that degree of commitment is going to have a lot to do with how we react to what happens or what people say, do, and so forth. I had a situation the other day where I had to go to a lodge that's having problems, and all some things got out of hand, and some people went to the Grand Lodge that shouldn't have, and I thought, boy, I'm going to go down there and read the riot act. And then I went to church and got my head straightened out for the week. You know? And it's all about that commitment. How committed are you to what is right?
Oh, and, well said, Bill.
And absolutely.
I went back and I went to that meeting and I said, you know, I was going to come in here and just and snort and snarl, but I said, that's not going to get anything accomplished.
Right.
And I said, and fellas, I went to church this morning, and I said, you got to go to church because you got to get your head screwed on straight for the week that's coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you have to be committed to your response, and I think that's an absolute great comment, Bill. I'm going to have to remember that.
Yeah, well.
No, cool. And I, you know, I find the more I, you know, I spend some time every day reading the ritual because every time I do, I get some new insight that not that the words change in the ritual. It's just I think about it differently. And I find that back to the point you made, Bill, is it kind of gets my head screwed on right for the day. I respond differently because I've kind of found some peace saying, oh, gee, I really need to, you know, be committed, as you said, to the practice of Masonry today.
Yeah.
I think that's a cool comment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think about that coaching-wise, too. You know, if somebody rubs you the wrong way, you snarl a little bit, and you have two choices. I'm going to yell and scream at them, or, you know, I'm going to pull them under my wing and talk to them and talk to them calmly. And that's how, you know, coaches get fired when they start yelling and screaming, although they do make for a great show on ESPN.
Well, you know, but, a young man, I wrecked my dad's car one time just after I got my driver's license. So I'm sweating bullets about the whole thing, and he comes home and looks at it. And did you call the insurance man? Yeah. Did you take care of it? Yeah. And he said, well, okay, we got some other things to do. I said, that's it? He said, well, you're going to take it to the body shop and deal with it. I said, wait a minute. I mean, that's all? He said, hey, screaming and yelling never fixed a fender.
That's true.
You know, and I never forgot that. And I thought more of my father because he approached it that way.
Sure.
And
that,
so
that's awesome.
I think when you approach life in that manner and you commit yourself to what is right. Now, everybody has to sit down and do some serious soul searching as to what is right. And can you do that on your own? No, I don't think you can. I think you have to turn to a higher power to determine what's right and what's not right. And then you have to commit to that. And then the rest of it takes care of itself.
Wow.
I'm totally with you.
Yeah. Anyone else on the call here have any thoughts or comments? Please chime in, introduce yourself, and chime in. Oh, they fell asleep on us, maybe.
I tell you what, I might put people to sleep. I guess I.
No. It's been really cool, Nick and I think it's a topic that we need to think about a lot, is that being leaders, we are servants. I mean, a leader's job is to, if you think about the leader who's supposed to lead a group through the jungle, you know, what's he doing? He's out front with a machete chopping down stuff, making a path. That's what we as Masonic leaders should be doing, is removing obstacles for our brothers and allowing them to thrive in our lodges and as leaders themselves. So this servant leadership inverted pyramid thing really makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think you can definitely translate it in your lodge, and I would urge any brother and really go as far as challenging any brother to take it home to your lodge and to translate it. It doesn't matter if you're the worshipful master or if you're the senior steward or if you're the newest young man in the northeast corner still. Your say matters, and you are a leader, whether you know it or not.
Well, okay, Nick, now is it tomorrow night you're doing this at Neocacia?
Yeah, tomorrow night we're doing it at Neocacia Lodge, our stated meeting night. Dinner will be at 6:30, $2 donation for our we'll call them young ladies, our young ladies that come in and be our wives. And we have a nice dinner with them, potluck dinner. And we'll go upstairs and have the meeting at 7:30. It is an education-focused meeting, and we'll have a great conversation. It'll be collaborative discussion. Start off with a little classroom, kind of just to introduce the topic to everybody, and then we'll go through and collaborate how we can take servant leadership and acting above the line in not only our lives but in our daily lives.
Cool.
And if anybody wants to reach out to me personally, I will travel all over the state of Ohio. I would love to speak in lodges and do it. I'm offering service to any member that asks.
Very good. Hey, we'll take you up on that.
Nick, that might be something you might want to put in the Ashler.
Yeah, there you go.
Get a hold of Ken Cohen and maybe write up a little piece about it and say, hey, I'm offering this service to any LEO out there, and I'll be more than happy to come to your lodge and speak on this. And I think one of the Grand Master's programs this year is to try to develop some inter-lodge action with education programs. So that might be
it's a neat idea.
Direction.
Yeah.
I would love to be there tomorrow night, but I'll be at New England's inspection.
I have poor planning. I chose the night to do this on an inspection night, but that's okay. Like I said, I can always do it at another lodge anytime. And it is on the Neocacia Lodge website if anybody wants to jump on there. Neocacia Lodge website under education. And then it's tomorrow's date, 2/24, servant leadership and acting above the line.
Very cool. Well, Nick, again, you've just had a lot of value tonight. As everyone knows, this call is recorded, and it'll be posted on the Masons Lead Better website, hopefully by tomorrow afternoon. And so as we draw here very close to our allotted time tonight, I want to mention a couple of things. Number one, our next call is Tuesday, March 22nd at 7 p.m. And as always, I've made this pitch before, I welcome any brother who has some thoughts that he would like to be a guest here as we dialogue about masonry, about personal improvement, about leadership. So please don't hesitate to send me an email, mike@masonsleadbetter.com. Give me an outline of what you propose to talk about, and we'll talk about it. And I'd love to have you on here to share value with your brothers. So just a quick pitch to get another guest.
Now, Mike, the call started tonight at 7 o'clock?
It did.
Oh, okay, because I got an email here from you that said it was at 7:30.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, did so I? That's why I got on at 7:30 and you guys were already into it. But
was that the one with Nick's picture?
Well, it's it doesn't have Nick's picture on it. It says our next Tuesday evening at 7:30 on our next Master Builder call, we're pleased to have as our guest Brother Nick Boyard. And then it gives a bio of Nick and the Acacia Lodge and so forth.
Well, you know what?
What?
I think that's my screw up because I thought for sure, and I put it several other places at 7, but I may have just done that. If you just read it to me, I must have done that. So I certainly apologize.
Yeah, I came from you. Well, I just wondered, but when you said 7 o'clock, I said, aha, okay.
Yeah, well, that's my failure. I apologize for that, and I won't let it happen again, you know?
Well, it's not a problem.
I just appreciate those who came late to show up, and I'm sorry that I had messed you up. So
no, you didn't mess me up at all. No.
Okay. Well, anyway, as we close this evening, I want us all to remember our Masonic obligation to preserve the reputation of the fraternity. And with us, that thought that we should always strive to be the man who distinguishes himself by acting upon the square. And Nick talked to us tonight about our response, and we talked about our response to life should be that of a Mason. So let's all strive to be that man who the community looks to as a moral man acting upon the square. And with that, I'll say goodnight, my brothers, and we'll see you next time.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night,
brother.